It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is the final day of April, April 30th, 2024, and we have a lot to get into on today's show. It was a busy week in this past week, but we saw a handful of Gamecocks get drafted. On top of that, another handful were signed, and then we also had a pair invited to rookie minicamp, so we'll get into that. We will also get into taking a look at what South Carolina has done as we get ready to head into May from a recruiting standpoint. And we'll also talk about the transfer portal, because today, that spring window, that second window of the school year, it closes today by midnight, 11:59. So we'll explain a little bit about what you need to know about that, and plus where South Carolina might be looking at, because as of this show, the projected scholarship total for USC heading into the fall, it is at 83. We've talked about this over the last couple of weeks, and how when you look at that number, at least heading into that spring game, not to get so caught up on the fact of, okay, oh, shoot, they're at 85. They're not going to be able to make any moves in the transfer portal. Not so fast. Things take care of itself. And as we've seen already, things have played out just like that. Because USC, again, projected to have 83 scholarships right now for the fall, can fill two more of those spots. And that's, shoot, things could always change before now and then as well. As always, join us, weigh in, whether you're watching on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, wherever, weigh in on today's show, and we will get you involved in the show today. Having said all that, let's start with the draft this past weekend. And when we look at it, I think the four guys that got drafted, Leggett, Rattler, Dial, Gargiulo, if you were following along leading up to the draft, on Gamecock Central, had the big guide that we always put out, the Gamecock draft guide, the ultimate draft guide for all your Gamecock news each year. Those are the four players that we expected to go in the draft. Now, there were some we could project, okay, maybe they're going to be a seventh-round draft pick to potentially being an undrafted free agent. Maybe you can make the case about with Trey Knox. But those four, not surprised. I was a little surprised that Marcellus Dial went ahead of Nick, but really nothing surprised me in the sense of what we saw. I know some people, and we can talk about this with Spencer Rattler. Rattler getting drafted in the fifth round. I noticed some that probably surprised you, and I understand. And there's intern Joe. Joe, good to see you. As we lead things off talking about the draft, I get that. There'll be people that will look at Rattler falling, and the first thing that will come to mind is, okay, some of the things that were discussed on the broadcast. I respect the hell out of Pete Thamel. He's a Boston guy. He's one of the best when it comes to college football reporting. And whether or not that was him talking to someone in the NFL world, whether that be a scout, whether that be a GM, whether that be a coach, wherever, right? If he got that information from someone, because as reporters, you're only as good as your sources, right? I mean, that's just the way it goes. But if he's only getting that from one person, even two, Pete, what are you friggin' doing, man? Really? Really? It's just so lazy, because from a national standpoint, if you haven't been paying attention to South Carolina the last 2 years, if you haven't been paying attention to Spencer Rattler during his time at USC, then you hear that on the outside. For example, I'm at a wedding. I'm out in friggin' Arizona. And people were asking me about Rattler as he continued to drop. And they said, man, do you think it has anything to do with this? And I said, if any team thinks that, they didn't do their homework. Because in my 2 years of covering the guy, that was the complete opposite of what we heard and what we saw. And I shared this story on 107.5 yesterday. I've had players in the past, when they transfer in here, I'll reach out to players on the team and I'll say, what can you tell me about this guy after a month or so, 2 months in? If they had any red flags or any type of narrative like this one that people might need to be wary of. And in the past, there's been times where players have said, yeah, this guy, we've heard that he's a scumbag. Guess what? He is a scumbag. When Rattler came in, I reached out to several players on that team, part of that team 2 years ago, and I asked them the same exact question. What's the deal with this guy? Is he a good guy? Is he what he was being portrayed to be? Because there's players on that team that I spoke to when Rattler came in here that reached out. They said, man, I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried about this guy coming in because we've seen the document, the documentary on Netflix and this and that, and the way he was portrayed. And then I had some of those same players get back to me 2 months, 3 months after the fact of what once Rattler got into the program. And it was night and day different with what they were telling me compared to what their original thoughts are. So I say that because it just goes to show how lazy of a narrative it was. And I bring all that up to say, I don't think that was the reason why he fell. We heard Adam Schefter, he was on Pat McAfee on his show on Monday. But as I even alluded to the other day, not exactly word, you know, verbatim for what Schefter said, if you look at the needs for a lot of those guys, a lot of those teams, especially teams that needed a quarterback, I don't know what the hell the Falcons were doing. So any Falcon fans listening, I mean, that's a story for another day. But typically you can break it down into tiers. When a team really wants a quarterback that bad, they're going to reach in the first round. Okay. We saw that happen with six teams. After that, there's a totally different tier. There's a totally different tier. And I think that's what we saw with Rattler, essentially. You know, then you have the next tier of teams looking for a quarterback. Typically, in that tier, you know, they're not going to be reaching for a quarterback in the second round. Sometimes it can be third round, fourth round, and in this case, fifth round. And if you look at Rattler, Joe, and I want your thoughts on this, he was projected to be a late third to a fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. He fell to the fifth round. Now, to me, what that tells me is based on the teams that were looking for a quarterback, they felt like, okay, we could wait a little bit longer. The Raiders were a team. The Jets were in there. The Giants were another team that we were keeping eyes on. But he fell to the fifth round. And he fell to a team where, honestly, when you look at the breakdown of it and you look on the quarterbacks on that roster, Derek Carr, starting with him, a lot of the quarterbacks on that roster, these are guys that have been journeymen. He has a really good opportunity to go in there to compete. And I think the beauty of it, too, is with Carr being there, you don't have to worry about going into a situation where, oh, crap, man, if he's the starting quarterback week one, does he have the pieces around him? He can really groom into being the NFL quarterback that he needs to be. And I truly believe in that situation, he'll earn an opportunity at some point.
Yeah, most definitely, Mike. I loved your breakdown of the Rattler situation, and I agree fully, right? I broke it down quite a bit on the walkthrough on Sunday. We talked about it quite a bit, but I'm going to work backwards for this, right? So Schefter was on the McAfee show yesterday, right? And he said there were a couple of teams that were interested in Spencer Rattler. And a couple of those teams went into the first round and took quarterbacks, that being Denver and Atlanta. So I think, you know, it is beating the drum of what Shefty is saying. It was more of, you know, teams that needed a quarterback, you know, decided to trade up and make their moves that way. But, you know, I think the whole, like, QB1 thing, I think that's just a cop-out excuse that teams kind of told Pete Bamel, right? I think it really is. Because if you're
and that's it. Team, and Joe, on top of that, how many teams? How many teams? Because, look, it's not, two people say it. Would I be shocked if one team or two teams said it? No, I wouldn't be shocked. Okay, I wouldn't be shocked. But that is such a minority of it all. That's such a minority of it. And when you have something like that and things change over time, people change, people grow, especially when we're talking about 17, 18-year-olds to now being 22, 23. It's just so lazy to use that. Because again, from a national standpoint, if you don't pay attention to South Carolina week in and week out, if you're not in here in Columbia and pay attention to what Rattler has been in front of the camp, it is asinine to believe that. So I bring it up, Joe, because, I think you're spot on. But I just wanted to add that because how many people were saying this? Because I highly doubt.
It wasn't the whole league.
No,
like it was no
but
more.
That's
than
the narrative. Was. That's the unfortunate reality.
Yes.
That's the narrative that gets depicted and painted because the majority of people that aren't paying attention to this little bubble of the world in Columbia, South Carolina, it's easy for them to look at that and say, "Oh, that must be the case because we don't pay attention to South Carolina the same way."
Yeah, and I mean, I think like all you had to do if you're in an NFL, I think it's a cop out excuse, right? Because you are a professional football team. You're going to do the due diligence on a guy. You're not going to base your entire scouting report based off a TV show when he was 18, right? That doesn't make any sense. And so I think it was just a matter of the options tried up. And then, you know, ding on the national media there for just filling in the blank. It's like, oh, he dropped because, you know, this stupid QB1 show and stuff and how he was when he was 18. That was the narrative that was going to get run with. And so, you know, you need an explanation other than the fact that, you know, the two teams that were really liking him, you know, made a bonehead move and went up and took quarterbacks. You know, personally, I think he's better than a Bo Nix in Denver. But, you know, the Michael Penix pick too, I mean, it doesn't necessarily make as much sense as it would have to go down and get a steal like Rattler. But now, I mean, I see, you know, there were a couple comments saying that the fit is perfect, and I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Right? I think Spencer's going to have a chance to start a couple games in this league. I think, you know, they see him as the eventual successor to Derek Carr, I would think. Or at least in the short term, right? And so, you know, and I said this on my show too. I really hope Spencer gets his get back on Caleb Williams and my Chicago Bears. But I think, you know, he's going to have a chance to flourish in this league. And, you know, based on the moves that Denver and Atlanta made, like, you know, I'm not completely sold on the fact that he would in either of those two places, most in particularly Denver. But yeah, I mean, again, I think the whole QB1 thing is just, it's a cop-out excuse, Mike. I mean, it really is. And then it was just blown out of proportion because it was an easy narrative to run with, because you're right. Like, you know, and especially this, I mean, South Carolina didn't have the season that they wanted last season. Right. So Spencer Rattler was not on enough of a national stage for, you know, people to, I guess, change their mind or whatever they needed. But I mean, and that narrative has been following around, and it's so easy to just ding the kid for that, right? And it's the easy way out, saying that, you know, oh, it's just because he was a jerk in a Netflix show, right? It's the cop out excuse, and it just,
well, you know what it is. I'm gonna use a comparison, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, but and again, it's not a great like apples to apples comparison, but you'll get the point where I'm trying to go with. It's people look at one thing. And it's easy just to go with and run with it because it's like, oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. For example, Nick Gargiulo, the number of boneheads that were crapping on Gargiulo this season, Oh, this guy's awful. Get him out of here. This and that. Guess what? Guy gets invited to the combine. Guy goes on to get drafted. The bozos that were saying, why are they bringing in an Ivy leaguer? Yeah, looking real smart now. So I bring that up to compare it because it's easy to look at one thing when you don't know what the hell you're talking about, because from an offensive line standpoint, you don't know what the blocking assignments are week in and week out. You don't know what's going on twists. You don't know what's going on different assignments where these guys have to come. It's different. It's different than what you think it is. So I say that because from an outsider's perspective, you look at something and you think, okay, I know everything. I know everything about it. So now let's flip it. I'm talking about Rattler. For the people that weren't paying attention to Columbia, they're on the outside, right? They're outsiders. If you're a fan in Columbia, you know what's going on with Rattler. You're on the in this case. But for the outsiders, they don't friggin' know what the hell's going on. But they think, oh, I know what's going on. I saw how he acted in Oklahoma. I saw how he... Really?
And Mike,
really?
Hold on. I'm gonna offer just a quick input here. But like before he got to South Carolina... I mean, without seeing like what kind of person he was up close, I was thinking the same thing, right? That, I mean, I hand up, right? That you know, it was the Netflix show and everything that followed him, right? And it's like, oh gosh, like what is this going to be? But then as soon as you got to see him and got to interact with him, you're like, oh, this is a kid that's been humbled. This is a kid that's really changed things up. And, you know, and that was instant, right? I mean, we could see that from, like, as soon as he got there, the opening press conference, really, like, you could see that, I mean, it was nothing of what, you know, he was being portrayed as, even at Oklahoma, and what the media was, you know, portraying him as there. So, yeah, I'm with it.
So real quickly, and then we'll move back because we skipped over a big one, which was Xavier Legette, but certainly the storylines, and not just storylines in Columbia, but national standpoint. With Spencer Rattler, thought we would lead it off with there today. The New Orleans Saints quarterback room. Now, I know Taysom Hill listed as a quarterback by the Saints on their official website. He's an athlete. He's playing all over the place. But I'll mention Hill in this case. But again, I think we all know that he's someone that bounces around. He plays tight end, receiver, does everything. But just for the sake of this exercise, bear with me. Derek Carr, Taysom Hill, Jake Haener, Kellen Mond, Nathan Peterman, and then Spencer Rattler. So if you want to move Taysom Hill off the list, that's fine with me. But you look at that, Peterman, Mond, Haener, and then got Carr. Carr, of course, he's the veteran in the room. He has the most experience as a starter. There's some other guys that have been journeymen that's on this list. I think at least two of those quarterbacks will be cut. And if you, again, move Hill out of that situation and you see Carr at the top, I mean, shoot, I think Rattler will certainly be in the mix and be competing for the, for a number two spot. And like I said, the beauty of the situation that he's in, Derek Carr, he's a guy that's been in the league for a long time now. And I say long time, I mean, it's crazy to think when he came out. But he's going to have an opportunity to learn some of the good from him. Now, has Carr's career been up and down at times? Certainly. But he's a guy, too, that when he's on, he's on. And there's a lot of good things that he brings to the table that a young player like Spencer Rattler can learn from. And it's going to be beneficial for him. Now, is Carr going to be, so this is the NFL, is Carr going to sit there holding his hand and tell him exactly what to do? Of course not. He doesn't want to lose his job. But at the same time, too, when you're in those quarterback meetings, you're going to be able to pick up some things that he's done to be able to help your game out. So I'm very excited to see what Rattler can do there. But again, I think we're all in agreement. When we heard that come out on day three, it was so easy to say, because as a consumer, when you're talking about your audience, and the majority of the audience doesn't pay attention to South Carolina, it's real easy for them to hear that and be like, oh, all right, that makes sense. I mean, come on. Come on. But anyway, moving along. For the 16th time, in program history, a Gamecock was drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. Xavier Legette staying in the Carolinas. The Panthers slide up to the 32nd pick, final pick of the first round on Thursday night, to make sure the Mullins safe South Carolina native is staying down in the Carolinas. I think it's a tremendous fit. For multiple reasons. I think the real thing that stands out to me is the fact that you have a player who is capable of doing a lot. Like, you can put him in the slot. You can put him out on the perimeter. We saw how South Carolina used him last year. I think some of that had to do also with the injuries that were piling up with the offensive line, and they had to get creative with just trying to get the ball out of Rattler's hands quickly. But I think it also shows what Legette can bring at the next level, and to a team like this that desperately needs some stars out on the perimeter for Bryce Young. So look, the Panthers, the situation that they're in, and certainly the situation that they were going to be in this year from a draft standpoint, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time for Carolina to turn things around just because of some of the moves they made in the past. But to be able to get into the first round, you get your guy. Being at Pro Day for South Carolina 2 months ago, whenever the heck it was, a month and a half ago, the number of scouts that were down there, and I get it, we can say, all right, well, they're in the Carolinas. Usually these scouts are positioned regionally. The number of scouts that came down there, my goodness, you had a bunch of Carolina Panther scouts there. And there was a reason why you had TV stations from Charlotte making their way to South Carolina's Pro Day, because I can tell you, in the past, that hasn't always been the case. It is sometimes. I mean, sometimes we've seen even like a guy like Eric Douglas last year.
Yeah.
has Charlotte ties, TV stations came on down. But it's not always the case. They came down there because they knew, hey, there's a real possibility the Panthers might take this guy. And I'll be seeing the Bills in that 32 spot in that first round. I would not have been shocked if Buffalo picked him, just because Buffalo certainly needed a wide receiver too. But hey, like we've said before, when it comes to the NFL, all it takes is one team to fall in love with you. I think there would have been a lot of teams that would have fallen in love with Xavier, but the Panthers fell in love with him enough to move up to the first round to get him. And I think it's a great fit, especially for a guy being from Mullins. He gets to be close to home, and I think you're going to see a lot of Gamecock fans and a lot of people from Mullins making their way up to Charlotte to support this young man in the near future.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a great fit. You know, as much disorganization as the Panthers have right now, you know, you hope that they do him right at the very least, right? Really good kid, really just solid human being. And everything that we know about XL and just him as a, you know, as a worker and just what he puts into the game. It's, you know, it makes you really excited for him, you know, winding up in the first round. The Bills somehow liked Keon Coleman more. But you know, and Panthers end up with Leggett. So, again, I think it's a good fit. He's got a really, really good skill set, and I think he's going to bring, you know, a lot to Bryce Young. You're going to see him obviously take a step up with Leggett now that he has some weapons. So I think it's a good fit. Again, I just hope the disorganization and the Panthers doesn't, you know, do him wrong, if you will. You know, you want him to be done right, and if, you know, his future isn't necessarily with the Panthers somehow in the future, you know, you just hope he's done right at the end of it. But I think the kid's going to have a really big NFL career, and quite a promising one as well. So happy for him, and he gets to stay close to home too, so that accent isn't going anywhere.
No, that accent isn't going anywhere. Someone mentioned trading the Patriots owner with the Panthers owner. I just imagine if X ended up like in New England and had a Boston accent combined with his Mullen accent, what that would sound like.
Sell? I can't imagine Marcellus Dial is going to pick up a Boston accent. We'll get to Sell too, but Sell with a Boston accent is going to be a little weird.
We'll see. Kevin Harris said that he started picking up things, you know, some tendencies there. He's a Georgia boy, but
Caffey.
I remember up there, he said that once you're around people that start dropping their R's, grows on you a little bit, pick things up a little bit. Moving along, though. So that was the first round pick. Fifth round, of course, Spencer Rattler. But the sixth round, Marcellus, that guy that you were just talking about, Joe, sixth round pick, 180th overall pick by the New England Patriots. Obviously, with my ties in New England and covering the team last year, I can tell you that the Patriots, they desperately, desperately, desperately going into this draft looking for some depth at cornerback. And just depth in the defensive back room as a whole. And as we've talked about before in the past, the beauty about Marcellus, his versatility, he can play at nickel. Certainly he can play out at cornerback. But also, like we've said with many of these players over the last couple of years because of Pete Lembo, these players that we see that play, whether it be a wide receiver, defensive back position, they're also impact players in special teams. And Dial did some good things as a gunner. He's quick, ran a 4.46 in the 40 at the combine. But on top of that, he's very lengthy. He can get off guys easily. I think his wingspan measures out at 6'6". So he's a guy that's going to have an opportunity to be able to make the team here. And not just make the team, but to be able to make the 53-man roster because of, again, everything that he brings to the table. It's not just a one-trick pony. And I think that's the beauty. We look at guys like Nick Muse over the last couple of years. We look at guys like Jalen Brooks, Nate Atkins, even this year's draft class. And we'll talk about some of the guys that were signed as undrafted free agents. Amarion Brown, bringing more to the table than just being, okay, I'm a wide receiver. I'm a corner. In this case with Dial, not just special teams, but he can play multiple positions defensively. And I think that was another reason why the Patriots really fell in love with him.
Yeah, absolutely. 71% of the earth is covered by water. The other percentage is covered by Marcellus Dial. You know, I think it's a great fit in New England. It's going to be similar to what the Dolphins were doing with Cam Smith, I think, you know, more of a depth piece, but and then eventually working him into the starting rotation. And, you know, I think Cam's going to see a lot of playing time this year for the Dolphins. So I think it's kind of a similar track. with Dial. And again, I think Dial, you know, works hard enough to the point where, you know, especially with the Patriots, it's going to wear off. And he's certainly going to, you know, find a role with the team as well. So I think depth at corner is a big thing for you guys, Mike, up there in New England, and Dial certainly helping out with that.
Yeah, I heard instantly from a lot of the Patriot reporters reaching out saying, hey, what can you tell us about Dial? So there's interest there. There's interest there for sure. And he'll be with another Patriot, Kevin Harris. Well, Patriot, I mean, another Gamecock, excuse me. Yeah. Kevin Harris is up there. I guess you could say a Gamecock and a half because Jaheim Bell's there. But I know some people will start rolling their eye when I mention his name. He was also drafted by the Patriots a little bit later. We're not going to get into his pick, though. But person that we will talk about in their pick was the fourth and final Gamecock to be drafted this weekend. He had to wait for the second to last pick, and that was Nick Gargiulo. Seventh round, 255th overall pick by the Denver Broncos. Started at guard, moved over to center, big boy, 6'5", 317 pounds. Before he came to South Carolina, had a bunch of experience playing tackle as well. At Yale, don't see him playing tackle in the NFL, but I think he's a guy that can play between guard and center. This stat's pretty impressive between both his stops. 37 collegiate games he appeared in. Started in 36 of them. Not bad. And again, the thing about Gargiulo that I really like about him more than anything is he's a guy that, yes, very versatile. You can put him anywhere on the offensive line. He proved that during his time, not just at South Carolina, but during his time at Yale as well. But he is what we call old school football tough. Old school tough. And with the amount of injuries that that offensive line sustained last year, he had to play multiple positions too. He was banged up more than people knew down the stretch, including his snapping hand. We've talked about this in the past. That snapping hand, I'd have no friggin' idea at the end of the season, how he was able to even grip the ball. Yes, we saw some snaps that came out pretty low. And I think if you understand what we're talking about now, if you have a busted up hand, you can hardly grip a football. It's probably a good reason why. But it also was another reason that showed how much they still trusted him to still be the center despite that, because they also had some other injuries on the offensive line. That just goes to show how much confidence they had in him. But I think what he's going to be able to do, his smarts as well, which goes without saying being an Ivy League guy, I think he proved, and I know some people won't look at it this way because it's tough to, and I understand the offensive line as a whole, it really struggled last year. And I think obviously a big reason why is because of the number of injuries. So it's difficult for people to probably look at the glass half full when you're talking about looking at Gargiulo. Gargiulo proved that he could hold his own. And certainly when you look at some of the players that South Carolina has recruited over the last couple of years from a transfer portal standpoint, some of these smaller school players, they've hit on a good amount, but they've also missed. I mean, that's part of it. But Gargiulo, coming up from the Ivy League, anyone that said, oh, why are we bringing an Ivy Leaguer in? And I'm not saying that's how you're going to win every year, okay?
Yeah.
But I think more than anything, this guy can play. This guy, there's a reason why they brought him in. There's a reason why they brought in some Division II guys in the past. I know he's not here anymore, Mario Anderson. Mario Anderson, as he was able to get more comfortable here, guess what? He became one of the best running backs on your team, and he would have easily been one of your starters until he decided to leave. But you know what? Things happen, and you brought in some really talented guys via the transfer portal to compete in a room that also returns Juju McDowell as well as DJ Braswell. But where I'm trying to go with all this is some people get so caught up with, well, why is this player? Why aren't they going after this guy? Why are they going after this one of the transfer portal? This guy, small school. Relax. Relax. There's a reason why. And again, Gargiulo, he proved that doesn't matter where you start in your career. Doesn't matter. He came in here. He was their bright spot on the offensive line last season. No question about it. In a year that is very difficult to look at that positional group as a whole and take any good away from it. I understand, but it was still good enough for him to receive an invite to the NFL Combine as well as being drafted in the NFL draft. Pretty damn good for a guy who was an Ivy Leaguer a season ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So happy for Nick Gargiulo, right? I believe it was DJ that made the point. I hope he still paints his face in the NFL. Yeah, he looks like a bad man when he gets the eye black going. But
he shaved the hair, though. That's the only thing I'm upset about. And I said, Nick, I said, what are you doing? I said, you actually look like a guy that graduated from Yale now. I said, I need the Tarzan hair. So why are you shaving it up on me? He looked like Kenny Powers from East Down. And I'm mad that he cut the hair. But other than that, you know.
Yeah, I know. He fit right into the SEC when it came down here, man. And Mike, I think you're making a good point about the Ivy Leaguers too. I mean, captain at Yale, and we know obviously what kind of football they play up there at Yale. Tony Reno really locking things down. And I mean, my Chicago Bears took another offensive lineman from Yale too. So good football there, still in the Ivies. I mean, that's if anything, that's proof of the pudding, right? Bunch of Ivy Leaguers getting picked this past weekend. So yeah, so happy for Gargiulo. I think he'll love it in Denver. He proved at South Carolina that he can, you know, make the adjustment, move over, right, if he needs to. And I think that's something that, I mean, NFL teams certainly look at a lot. I know Joe Alt, he was recruited at Notre Dame to play tight end, and then they moved him into tackle. And I know that was one big thing for Harbaugh and all them. It's like you can plug him and play him, right? Same thing with Gargiulo. When a guy can move positions, it adds the NFL caliber of somebody like that. If you can move positions and play it well, I think it's really good. And you know, Gargiulo, finding his home in Denver, and I'm really excited for him. I think, you know, he's got a really good shot, make the team and make this a lengthy NFL career.
Someone asked Big Red, says, how do you grade guys on the line when it's such a collective effort kind of position? It's one of those things, and I've had conversations with former offensive linemen about it, because when you play the game, especially if you played a certain position, you can read things that other people they're not going to be able to pick up on. Now, certainly if you pay attention to it over time, you'll be able to pick up on some of those things. I mean, I've shared this story, but being a defensive back in college, it took me years to be able to watch a football game again and to be able to just enjoy it, because you're programmed to watch it a certain way where you're watching your position. You're watching the wide receiver in this case, talking about as a defensive back. You don't know what the hell is going on the field, because you're so locked in after being basically brainwashed how to watch football a certain way. So that for these offensive linemen, especially the former offensive linemen, and some of these websites that do a breakdown, and I'm not saying every single one I would agree with how they break things down, but they understand, they have a certain eye for it. They understand, they can watch it and they can start to pick up what the blocking assignments were. And they have a better idea as, okay, if the center is doing this, why did the center do that? Well, the guard was supposed to do that. Now, on from a game standpoint, TV standpoint, whether you're watching in person, whether you're sitting on your couch watching it on the big screen, it's easier to look at and be like, wait a minute, that guy's getting burnt. That guy, well, the guy next to him could have screwed up his assignment, and now he's having to take on his assignment too. And, you know, stuff like that. But I bring that up because, yes, Big Red, it's a little bit trickier to grade. But over time, just like any position on the football field, if you have an eye for it, you'll be able to pick up some of those things that other people typically wouldn't be able to. And for a guy like Gargiulo, like I said, and we said it even during the fall, Joe, and I know it was difficult to highlight really anyone on the offensive line like we just talked about, but that's why during the season, we would bring things up and be like, man, Gargiulo was actually a bright spot on that offensive line. And I understand, even during that moment, that a lot of people would be like, what the hell are you talking about, Mike? Like, man, the offensive line. Yes, the offensive line had their struggles. And a lot of it had to do with injuries, too. It's not, you know, dismiss that. That's why it blows my mind that some people are like, oh, get Lonnie Teasley. Yeah. The guy came in for his first true year as the offensive line coach last season. And he had to deal with more injuries than, I mean, you can insert some type of joke there, some line there. But I think this year, the depth's going to be much better. But going back to last season, Gargiulo was certainly a bright spot on that offensive line. And I think it shows itself now more than ever after seeing some of the things that played out. Again, combine invite, being drafted on the offensive line for the Denver. I mean, shoot, he's going to be joining Nate Atkins out there. Like you mentioned, he's going to have an opportunity to learn from a great football mind in Sean Payton. And they're starting fresh out there. New quarterback, new offensive. Really, the offense is going to have a new face to it. So, I mean, he's going in at a great time. I'm eager to see what he's going to be able to do. Very eager. Having said all that, and I don't know if you can tell, the voice is trying to get back here. lost my voice over the weekend. I don't know how the heck baseball players do the time zone changes. I mean, it's still beating the crap out of me. Doing a red-eye flight. Oh, beating the crap out of me. But anyway, Nick Arjula will have to get ready for that flight out there. Couple guys that were signed as undrafted free agents. Amarian Brown had an opportunity to interview him a couple days before the draft, going back to last week. And one thing that we talked about a lot was the fact that during the meetings he had with NFL teams, he started to really see a pickup with special teams coordinators starting to talk to him more once the NFL made a rule change with their kickoff. Now, even though we did the story, even though we had the full interview with Brown, some people are like, wait a minute. He didn't return any kicks when he was at South Carolina. He didn't really do any of that. You have to go really all the way back to his time when he was like a freshman at Georgia Tech. Well, here's the thing. With the way the kickoff rule is, the new kickoff rule, it's not the traditional way that we are all accustomed to knowing it to be. More than anything, it's going to be very similar when you're a returner in terms of like the vision and similar to that of like a screen pass. You get you catch the ball, right, on the kickoff. Those holes are going to be quick. They're going to open. They're going to close quick. So if you're a running back, if you're a receiver, especially that is successful with screen passes, there's going to be a place for you to earn an opportunity with an NFL team, especially through special teams. So with Brown talking about that, there's been teams that are interested in me to playing wide receiver, but special teams is what some people are like, wait a minute. Now I think people can start to see that because not only was he signed as an undrafted free agent, Joe, I put this in the story, talked to his agent, Sarah, shout out to her, giving us the information about this. Signed as an undrafted free agent with the Cleveland Browns, the deal includes a $20,000 signing bonus and $150,000 guaranteed. Now, we're talking about NFL money. In the grand scheme of things, does that sound like a lot? No. For an undrafted free agent, for a guy like AB, in comparison to some of the other undrafted free agents that the Gamecocks had this year, I don't think people would have looked at AB and said he's going to be the one making that. But again, his value is much more than I think people understood it was going to be. And that's why I can tell you too now that probably around the fourth round, I'm looking at my phone now. I'm trying to get the times of this. Probably around the fourth round was around the time that the Browns really started to have more conversations with Brown about, hey, look, we'd love to be able to draft you. If it doesn't work out, then we'd like to sign you as an undrafted free agent. So those numbers, I mean, the numbers are starting to flow even before. And that typically happens, especially for a guy they really, really want, because teams will kind of play out in their head, okay, let's look at what we want, what we need, who do we feel like could still be there as an undrafted free agent, but let's put this thing in place as quickly as possible because as soon as the draft ends, we want to be able to get this done quickly. And as Lynn said, AB was signed, yeah, quick after the end of the draft. Yeah, Lynn, it was by the time it got to the seventh round from talking to AB's agent in real time as this thing's playing out, they want to give you that opportunity to be able to hear your name called and all that, right? But it's not going to play out that way for everybody. I mean, it's just the way it is. So the fact is they really liked AB and they really wanted to be able to give him an opportunity. So the numbers were all done. The only thing that held it up, it's funny, we can talk about it now. I'm at a friggin' wedding. I'm sitting there. I apologize to the bride later. It's one of those untouched weddings or whatever, you know, don't use your phones. I'm sitting there and I'm getting the numbers and I'm like, all right, well, Gamecock Nation comes first when it comes to football news. I can't sit here, you know. Someone said I do. Hopefully the other one said I do too. Seems like they're happy. So, you know, got the story out there. But, yeah, the deal was going to get done. The reason it got held up a little bit was AB just had to get his signature on it, and that was taking a little bit longer. I don't know. I don't know if AB went out for a burger or something. I don't know. But eventually paperwork came in. He was good to go. I like this. The Browns really, really, really like him. This goes back to some of the things we talked about during the draft process. We shared during the Gamecock Ultimate Draft Guide that the Browns were one of those teams to keep a close eye on when it came to AB. And as we see here, AB going to Cleveland, if you've been paying attention on Gamecock Central, this one should not surprise you at all.
Yeah, Brown to the Browns. I love it. Happy for AB because this is a unique skill set, right? You can throw him in the slot. Really good on special teams as well, right? And we've seen the Browns do a lot with that, really, like really give some of these young guns shots on special teams. So I think it's a perfect fit for AB, right? Especially as an undrafted free agent, he got to negotiate a little bit. And then, yeah, so I'm happy for him. I think it's a good fit out there in Cleveland. Good organization too. And so, yeah, good stuff for AB. And I think, you know, again, he can – what I'm looking to see out of AB is him just start to carve a role for himself out on special teams and then everything go up from there, right?
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's all it is. You earn opportunities, and I like this. God Loves Comics says AB's draft stock dropped when teams learned that Shane Beamer beat him head-to-head in that 40. That was that reenactment of the Office episode when they were running outside of the ops building. For those of you who don't know what God Loves Comics is talking about, that was a good clip. Appreciate you bringing that one up. I like that. But no, he's going to have an opportunity. He's quick. I think what I like about AB outside of special teams, he's quick and he's someone that despite his size, he can take hits and he can get up. Now, certainly when you're talking about going from the SEC to going to the NFL, even that is the closest. That is the closest when you're talking about preparation in comparison to any of these other conferences. And no disrespect to the Big Ten, but I mean, let's call it for what it is. There's a reason why when you look at the NFL draft year in and year out, there's just so many SEC players drafted. It's essentially the farm league, right? So when I look at AB, he's someone that is capable of being able to take those hits. And I think that's another thing that will help him because when we talk about the new kickoff format, things are going to change with that as well. You're not going to see, in my opinion, from talking to different scouts, you're not going to see the same body type players on kickoff. And what I mean by that is I think instead of seeing some of the corners out there, you'll see more maybe edge players, maybe linebackers. You're going to see strong safeties. You're going to see players on kickoffs that are going to be able to disengage with their blockers as opposed to in years past where guys are using more of their speed to get down the field. So I bring that up because what does it look like on the opposite side of that? What type of blockers do you get? Do you see tight ends out there? Do you see maybe even wide receivers that are good stock blockers? So we talk about AB being back there as a returner, no question. I'm not saying AB is going to be a stock blocker on kickoff, but God forbid, if he proves himself to be a good blocker out there, that's another way you can earn yourself an opportunity. So many, many different ways to be able to earning spots now because of special teams. Special teams seemed like it was starting to slowly drift away. That's why players, unfortunately, like the great Devin Hester, you saw them towards the end of their career, their careers kind of sped up a little bit in comparison to what it should have been. They should have been able to stay out there for a couple extra years. But when you eliminate kickoffs and they're going through the end zone so much, we think we talked about in AB's story leading up to the draft, I think it was only 22% of kickoffs that were returned last year, which was like a new low in league history. So I get it. Some people are going to look at this new NFL kickoff rule. They're not going to be crazy about it. I like the way that it used to be when there was actually returns and they weren't just moving it up to friggin' what it felt like midfield. But having said all that, if you give me the choice of, okay, would you rather have these kicks going out of the end zone, what seems like every kickoff, or would you rather have what this new rule is going to be? Give me this new rule because you're going to see more returns. It's going to be different. It's going to feel weird, but just like anything in life, it'll become the new norm. We'll become accustomed to it. But I think we'll see a lot of exciting plays. And it's also going to help out a lot of players be able to make rosters who maybe would have been overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I was about to make the point Big Red makes right here. Any way you can get on the field makes it more valuable to the team, which reflects in the paycheck. Yeah, absolutely. Any opportunity you can get, especially if you're a young player, right?
Jay Diz. JT says, I'd like to see a young Melvin Ingram on the new kickoff teams. Oh, goodness. Jeez. My goodness. Can you imagine putting him or, I say high school Clowney, but
yeah,
Clowney, no. Healthy Clowney back. I just,
way more, like,
that was a conversation that popped up last week, talking about some of the best high school highlight tapes you've ever seen. And Reggie Bush certainly is up there. But my two favorites, number one, Noel Devine. I think hands down, that's my favorite. But number two would be Jadeveon Clowney, because the beauty with Clowney was you didn't even need to circle him. You didn't even have to highlight him. You knew. He looks like one of those like created players. Like you try to play like whether it's Madden or NCAA football back in the day. I mean, he was just the biggest guy on the field. He ran the fastest. He looked like a creative player out there in high school. I mean, it was ridiculous. So I don't know. Maybe a high school Clowney back there. I don't know. High school Clowney might be able to break one through there with that return set, but we'll see. Moving along, though, because I do want to talk about some of the high school recruiting and portal. Trey Knox, tight end, signed by the Minnesota Vikings. I think that one, Joe, when we look at it, may surprise some people. A guy that could have been drafted. I had him projected to be drafted in around that seventh round to potentially being an undrafted free agent. I think what hurt Knox more than anything, you can't say that he had poor numbers at the combine in pro day without putting some context to it. Coming back from an injury, still not 100%. I think that hindered him a little bit with some of his times. And I think, too, some teams looked at that and said, all right, you know, maybe we can get him as an undrafted free agent instead of reaching for him and trying to get him in the draft. For Knox's case, he goes to Minnesota. We know that there's another tight end there that played football for the Gamecocks, Nick Muse. Interested to see what Knox can do on special teams, because that's been what's helped Muse. Muse just got a new contract recently. That's one of the reasons why. Is because Muse has done so much from a special team standpoint. Now, in comparison to some of the other tight ends across the league, Muse hasn't really played that much. He got called up at times, but I think this is going to be a good opportunity for Muse to be able to see more playing time. If you're a guy like Trey Knox, though, you're trying to come in there and saying, hey, not so fast. So he's going to have an opportunity, but he's going to have to step up on special teams, because that's what Muse, that's what some of these other guys across the league have done, especially when you're in the situation that he's in, which is being an undrafted free agent. Tyreek Johnson, I love this, going up to the New York Jets. He's going to be reunited with a former Gamecock linebacker, Shaq Wilson. If you think for a minute that that didn't have a role with this, you're crazy. Shaq loves being able to get those Gamecocks up there. Good opportunity for Tyreek to go up there. Edge player, a guy that can play not just on that defensive end position, but he can also get bumped in a little bit. His big thing, and we're going to say this about a bunch of guys, it feels like here, just staying healthy. Dealt with injuries early on in his career, but as he demonstrated this past season, being able to be as healthy as he's been in a long, long time. 3.5 tackles for a loss, 2.5 sacks coming this past season. Jordan Strawn, mini camp invite to the Tennessee Titans, but he also told me on Sunday night that the Kansas City Chiefs have also invited him. And for those of you that aren't familiar with how some of these things work, when you're invited to a mini camp, essentially it's like a tryout. So you can go to as many of those as you want if a team invites you. So he'll have two cracks at it. Again, with Strawn, the injuries piling up. If he doesn't get hurt week two, 2022 against Arkansas, I truly believe Strawn would have been a third, fourth round draft pick, because he was a freak athlete. We saw that when he was at Georgia State, comes on over, plays behind some talented guys at edge like J.J. Anabare and Aaron Sterling, waited his time, gets on the field when he had that opportunity. But what happens? An injury happened. But I think Strawn's going to have a chance to be able to prove people that he's still capable of doing a lot of good things. But again, you get a camp invite because of those injuries. Prove yourself. I think there'll be a spot for him somewhere in the league. And finally, this one makes me just smile. Kerryon Joiner getting a camp invite to both the Seattle Seahawks and New Orleans Saints, as Joiner told us on Saturday. So congratulations to Joiner. Saturday was the Seahawks one, and then on Sunday he told me about the Saints one. What I really like about this one, Joe, with Joiner, having the opportunity to go down there with the Saints.
Yeah.
I mean, when we think about Taysom Hill, I mean, he was essentially South Carolina's Taysom Hill. So if any team can find a way to make it work, I think it could be the Saints. But again, having an opportunity to go out to Seattle, just fight. And by the way, he's getting brought in as a running back. But as I've told other people and from talking with DK over the weekend, I wouldn't look at DK as just a running back. He's someone that could bring multiple things to the table. And I think anywhere he goes, whether it be, you know, just these two camp invites, Seattle, Saints, they're going to look at him as not just a guy you hand the ball off to. He's going to be someone that can make an impact as a pass catcher, someone that can also play on special teams. Don't forget, he was a personal protector on the punt team, did a really good job with that. We talk about this new kickoff rule. I think Joyner is exactly what you're looking for as a blocker up front. I mean, my goodness, what he was able to do as a personal protector, that's someone I could see go up there. Being a wide receiver, he developed his skills. Stock blocking, again, another reason why I think he could really do some good things with that new kickoff rule on top of everything else from a special team standpoint.
Yeah, most definitely. I think, you know, obviously he'll start off as a special teams guy, but I think, you know, when he played running back and had that full summer to develop his body into running back form, he looked really good. Like, I think, you know, his frame was perfect, looked the part as a running back, right? So now he just needs a little bit of that foot speed, and he's right in the mix for running back. But I think, you know, just overall team player, I think he could be a really good fit with the Saints, a team that's done it, as you mentioned, Mike, with Taysom Hill previously. So DK's just so happy for him too. You know, and you know that he's going to find a way one way or another. And again, I think it's another good opportunity out there in Seattle. So really interested to see, you know, how this ends up for DK, but sure that he'll find his way one way or another.
It's a good opportunity. And here's the other thing too. And I'm not saying this about DK, but just any players. These players go into these situations and they have an opportunity to earn one of these tryouts, getting a camp invite to a mini rookie mini camp. There might not necessarily be a spot for you on their team, but guess what? There's other scouts that are typically there for other teams, and then they're able to go back and say, hey, you know, we should take a shot on them. That was the case for Carlins Patel, and I use that just because that's one example that I can instantly remember off the top of my head, but this happens often. So the beauty about it is this. Hopefully DK goes out there to New Orleans, hopefully goes to Seattle, and one of those teams say, hey, you know what? You're coming to training camp with us. You've done enough. We like what we see. Come on by, man. Come on by. But if not, there's still some good with this opportunity, especially when you have two camp invites, because it just creates more eyeballs. It creates more eyeballs. But again, hopefully just one of those teams fall in love with him. Jordan Strawn, same case. And then we look at some of these other players as well that are trying to earn roster spots. They'll have a little bit more time, though, to worry about that. Having said all that, Joe, that takes care of the NFL draft. But, oh, and I will throw this out there, too, because some people get confused by this. Dante Turbo Miller, he signed with the Giants earlier this month. It's a big popsicle headache. But bottom line is, Turbo was not part of this year's draft class, despite the fact that he took part in Pro Day. There was a misunderstanding, I guess is the best way to word it. And Turbo, because he was ineligible last season, still stuck around the program, because he was ineligible, he was actually eligible for last year's NFL draft, the 2023 draft. That's why he wasn't eligible for this year. So that's why we did our breakdown on Gamecocks of the NFL. That's why we didn't include him, but I included a little sentence or two at the bottom because, again, some people that might have gone over their head, be like, wait a minute, I saw him at Pro Day. That's why. Wasn't part of this year's draft class. Again, one of those popsicle headache things. Having said all that, Joe, want to run through this real quick because I also want to hit on the transfer portal because the transfer portal closes tonight at midnight. If you're watching this on the East Coast live right now, we have what? 8-9 hours to go until it closes up. But a couple things to mention where South Carolina's recruiting class for 2025 stands at as of today. Right now, it is currently ranked 24th in the nation based on the industry ranking football team recruiting rankings. Say that five times fast on three. Four-star cornerback, Shamari Earls, hard commitment on April 20th. Four-star wide receiver, Brian Rowe, hard commitment on 4-9. That is April 9th. Three-star defensive lineman, Caleb Williams. He committed to South Carolina on April 21st. Three-star edge, Anthony Addison from Sumter, committed on April 12th. Three-star safety, DeMarcus Leach, committed on April 10th. And three-star wide receiver in the first commitment for South Carolina's 2025 class, wide receiver Jaden Sellers, back in October 26 of 23. So that is where South Carolina's class stands right now. I've brought this up, Joe. It's one of those things that when we look over the last 2 years, typically this time of the year, it's a little slow for USC, but then it just starts to really rev up, especially as we get into late May, early June. So what I would tell people is patience, but I would also tell people is things continue to change with college football, transfer portal being one of those. You're trying to prioritize everything all at once. It's difficult to, but have patience, especially with the fact that South Carolina, their spring game was a little bit late this year in comparison to where it's been in years past. So that's another reason why, okay, last week, South Carolina is going through their exit interviews at the end of the year with their players. And now, the last day of April, portal closes in a couple more hours.
Yeah. No, I mean, Mike, it'll be interesting to see, how things work out. Obviously, this portal window a little bit quieter for South Carolina than the one in the fall. In winter. So we'll just have to see. I think, yeah, it is one of those patience things. Like it's going to come around, but you got to remember South Carolina just wrapped spring football. What was it? I guess we're entering week two weeks ago. Right. So it's coming up, obviously closes tonight to midnight. So it'll be interesting to see, how things pan out. But as we mentioned, Mike, I think it's just, slower this time of year for South Carolina. And most of the moves are made in December.
Yeah, and I wonder if this will be a thing too, if we'll start to see a pattern on it, simply because you try to prioritize everything you can, right? Certainly when I think of prioritizing, the first and the biggest thing is making sure that guys stay. And I think South Carolina did a really good job with that. There were a couple guys that decided to leave, Fugar being one of them. We saw Nelson leave, defensive back. But those two didn't surprise me, because when you look at the depth chart and you look at certain positions and you look at, okay, where's this guy potentially factoring in? And the other part of it too is those are conversations that happen in those exit interviews. I'm not telling you verbatim for what Shane Beamer said to these guys or what the positional coaches said, but typically in those meetings, you go in there and they ask you, meaning the coach, the player, how do you think your spring went? Where do you think you can get better? Where do you think maybe you took a step back? What can you do in the offseason to take your game to the next level? And then there's honest conversations based on where do you see yourself as a player factoring into next year's depth chart? And then the coach responds and he says, well, I think this is realistically where we see you. And depending on your situation, if you're an upperclassman, maybe there's an underclassman that beats you out, whether it be in the fall or even in the spring, potentially, now you have to look at yourself in the mirror and debate, okay, do I want to stay here or do I want to go somewhere else? And for some of these players, they're going to take their chances elsewhere. But with that being said, Joe, it creates opportunities now to use some of those scholarships on positions that South Carolina certainly would like to use. Now, when we look at USC's scholarship count right now, as of today, the projected number of scholarships that South Carolina has already filled up for the fall, it is at 83. So 83, what's that leave you with? Two. Now, that does not mean things could always change over the next couple hours. We're taping this. We're doing this live, but depending on when you're listening to this, we're doing this in the afternoon on Tuesday, April 30th. You have until midnight tonight to be able to get that paperwork in. That doesn't necessarily mean in the system that these players will appear. We've seen in years past that when compliance gets the paperwork, sometimes their names don't pop up until a day or two later, sometimes 48 hours later. So I say that to say, not just South Carolina, but just in general, but if you want to look at it from a South Carolina standpoint of being out of the clear, wait until about Thursday. That's what I would say. Wait until about Thursday. Typically, though, if it's South Carolina and the guy's entering the portal, either myself, Chris, or Wes, we're going to find out about it beforehand, and we'll have a story up. As of right now, I'm not expecting any more, or at least any surprises, I should say. I didn't find these two to be any surprising news when it came out. But that's what I would say about that. As of right now, South Carolina, I would say the transfer portal news will start to pick up for them over the next week or two. I think the two positions that you should pay a close attention to, wide receiver and offensive line. Those are the two positions that I was told that they have an interest in. That does not mean that if there's like a cornerback out there or maybe another position that they feel like can help the team that they won't look at. But I think defensively, when you look at it from defensive line to linebacker, even safety, I feel like those three rooms in particular, and I say three rooms, I understand edge, defensive tackle is different, but those three in particular, those are pretty much taken care of. Cornerback, I liked what Vakari Swain did in the spring game, and I think that's going to put pressure. That's going to put pressure on the other guys to be able to compete. But if they feel like there's a veteran corner out there, I wouldn't be shocked if they brought him in. But wide receiver, certainly, and an offensive line, I think those are two to keep a close eye on. Joe, I don't know if there's any positions in particular. It looks like your allergies are beating you up, man.
Yeah, my allergies, this whole pollen thing, it was loading up a sneeze and then didn't have to sneeze. So, but getting my butt kicked out here in this spring. I don't know how. I mean,
I've been there with you, man. Just go get those allergy pills and pop them. You'll be good to go.
But in positions that I guess that, I mean, because I'm with Travis. I mean, I think they're kind of happy with where they're at roster wise. I think, you know, could go see them. Just, I mean, it's depth at this point. And Wes Mitchell just made a good point on Twitter, is that guys need to be in the portal by tonight. Doesn't mean they have to be committed.
Correct.
So, you know, really, you know, appreciate Wes for pointing that out and making that clear again. But I think offensive line, certainly one, wide receiver too. You could certainly leave the door open. I know you got a lot of transfers and a couple of good freshmen in there. Linebacker, I could see them also for a little bit of depth, but I think, you know, I'm with Travis. I think, you know, even if they, because they will add a couple guys, right? But even if they added nobody, I think, you know, they'd be pretty confident with where this roster's at right now.
Yep. And one thing too, I want to go back on real quick. We talk about the 2025 recruiting class. In comparison to last year, they are behind when you look at it from body-to-body standpoint. When I mean that, we want to have a count. Okay, how many players do they have in this year's recruiting class committed already in comparison to last year? Like, you can't argue that. What I would say, though, is what South Carolina is doing and going after, I think it would surpass last year's class. But I think the other thing, too, is, again, and every team's trying to figure this out, so it's not like this is an excuse against South Carolina, because everyone's having to deal with it. You're just trying to figure out how you parmentalize, and you're focusing on one thing to the other. So with the transfer portal, I mean, look, South Carolina, they're no strangers to going after players in the portal. And I have to go back. I heard a crazy stat that a fan told me the other night at Carolina Calls, and I have to go back to double check it. But when you look at players that are here on offense, I think players that have been here for 3 years or something like that have been here for at least 3 years. So like a Luke Doty, right? Guys that have been here for at least three seasons on offense. There might be only five players, if not less, on the offensive side of the ball. So I bring that up because while I understand that Beamer and the coaching staff have talked about, yeah, we're still going to value recruiting from a high school standpoint, because I think in a perfect world, you're able to bring players in, you're able to develop them, no question about it. But I also think, too, there's something to be said about making sure you can focus on bringing in some talented guys from the portal, guys who are ready, guys who are developed, that you're hoping that you're going to be able to bring in here to either compete as a starter or provide you that depth that maybe as an underclassman, you're not going to be able to provide right away. So I say that because when we look at over the last couple of years, we bring up a guy like Nick Gargiulo. Gargiulo comes in and he was able to be a difference maker from day one, play multiple positions for you. And then you look back over the last couple of years, some of the players South Carolina has brought in. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be guys who got drafted, Rattler being another one, of course, coming from the transfer portal. But I think that when we look at, I think we look back to like a year today, Joe, and we look at how this 2025 class went, and we're starting to look now, okay, there's been a couple years of the transfer, this transfer portal thing around now. Shane Beamer, this coaching staff, they're starting to figure it out. The college football world is starting to figure it out, but more importantly, South Carolina, how are they handling it? How are they attacking it? So I think by next year, we'll have a better idea because it feels like the last couple of years, it's kind of been like, all right, priority goes here, more so high school priority goes here. They won't come out and say, okay, we're just going to focus on the portal. And they're not going to come out and say, we're just going to focus on high school recruiting, because certainly it is a little bit between. But I also think, too, behind the scenes, they're starting to realize, all right, you know, we might have to prioritize just a little bit more here. And not saying that you're going to give up altogether on high school recruiting, because they've certainly have done a really nice job with some of the players that they've been able to recruit over the last couple of years, and they want to be able to add some big names over the next couple months. But I think you also have to look at that, because when we look at the standings or the rankings, we're talking about recruiting, transfer portal rankings aren't factored into the high school recruiting rankings. So that's something else to just keep in mind when we look at this, because I get it. You look at that number, 20th, 24th. Wait, what? I mean, that seems high. I get that. But let's also remember some of the stuff that South Carolina did with recruiting from the transfer portal just the last couple months. I mean, you talk about being able to flip their roster at multiple positions, right? That running back room, linebacker room, defensive line. My goodness, some of the things they've been able to do. Does that mean everything's going to be all sunshine and rainbows? Even the offensive line, some of the guys they brought in. No, certainly not. We'd love to be able to continue to have some more competition in that wide receiver room. But that's what we're talking about when we're saying about prioritizing. In a perfect world, you'd like to say, okay, they're going to be able to divvy everything up the same. The reality is there's only so many hours in a day. And you're not going to be able to do that. I don't care what kind of staff you have. They could have all the people in the world. It's very difficult to be able to do that. Very difficult. But that's just my two cents. Any final thoughts on that, Joe, before we say bye-bye and do our ads?
No, I got nothing.
Yep. Travis says this. To me, getting transfers hurt development of young guys as it can may affect confidence level. It's too early to give up on a guy like Caldwell. So a thing about it, Travis, is, and I get what you're saying. That's why, again, in a perfect world, I'd love to be able to develop players and have them, you know, be homegrown, if you want to call it that. The reality is, though, in this world that we live in with college football now, being able to bring guys in that you feel like can make an impact right away, teams are going to do that. Now, if they show promise in a way, like look at a guy like Vakari Swain and some of the pressure that he's putting on, a guy like Judge Collier heading into fall camp across from OD Fortune, it changes things up a little bit, in my opinion. Again, that doesn't mean South Carolina might not look at someone in the portal at that cornerback position, but I think you look at that differently now with what he was able to prove in that spring game on top of, from everything that we've been told, bless you, from everything that we've been told, what he looked like in spring practices, those other 14 practices. So it's just, it's the way of the world now, and it stinks. And I hate it for some of these younger players, but let's call it for what it is. Shane Beamer knows that if he doesn't win games, his job's on the line. And it's not just his job, but it's the positional coaches too. It's the support staff. It's everyone else there. So he also has a job to do in the sense of making sure that they're winning games. And if he feels like he can bring a player in or two that can make an impact, then he's going to do that. And ultimately, as he said many, many times before, you're going to have to compete for your job. Doesn't matter who you are that gets brought in here. You're going to have to compete. So you bring in someone via the transfer portal just because they might be the greatest thing since sliced bread. That doesn't mean he's just going to automatically just give the keys to that guy. He's going to have to compete it. Yeah. And if a younger guy steps up, guess what? Now you did exactly what you were looking for. You created that depth. You created more competition. And now you created a room, depending on the position, a room that has guys that can play. Multiple guys can play in that room. So just the way of the world, though. And I know not everyone's going to agree with it. I certainly miss parts of the good old days, if you want to call it that. But just like anything, you're going to have to adjust to it, because if you don't, others are, and you're going to get left behind. Speaking about getting left behind, there's probably some people, Joe, who got left behind this tax season because they didn't do their taxes. Now, if you're in one of those binds, not sure what the wait list is, not sure if there is a wait list, but there is a place I would recommend giving a call to, and that's Liberty Tax.
Yeah, Mike, tax ID is an uncertain feeling you get right before doing your taxes, but you don't have to go through it alone. The tax team at Liberty Tax in Irmo, Lexington, and Columbia will walk you through the process, clear up any confusion, and guarantee you'll get the biggest possible refund or your money back. It's tax time. If you're in a hurry for a refund, call on the tax team at Liberty Tax. They're fast, accurate, and guaranteed. On the other hand, if you think you might be owing Uncle Sam, talk to the Liberty Tax team to make sure you're not paying more than you should owe. They'll find every possible deduction for you. Locally owned and operated, stopped by tax professionals from your neighborhood. Open 9-9 on weekdays and 9-5 on Saturdays with multiple service options. Start through the Liberty Tax mobile app or through the desktop portal. Make an appointment or just walk in. Give the call to upload your tax documents. And when you come in, your return will be ready to review and sign. Give them a call on your screen right now. And for those listening, 803-462-5576. Once again, 803-462-5576 for all of your tax needs this tax season.
And today's show is also brought to you by our good friend Clint Hammond over at Movement Mortgage. If you're in the process of purchasing a home, or you're trying to find the lowest rate in the market, or maybe you're just interested in potentially buying a home in the near future, do exactly what our very own Wes Mitchell did, as well as former Gamecock quarterback and captain Perry Orth. Shout out to Perry. Celebrated a birthday yesterday, making us all feel old. I think he turned 31. Give Clint a call. 803-771-6933. It's a good show today. If you missed it, plenty of Gamecock talk on all levels. Talked a lot about the NFL draft early on. Talked about the recruiting class for 2025. We also talked about the transfer portal a little bit as well. If you missed any of this show, head on over to the Gamecock Central YouTube page where you can watch it in its entirety for free. Also, subscribe today. It's also free. Get a little notification every time one of these GC live shows drop or any video on Gamecock Central. Or if you're a podcast listener, head on over to the Gamecock Central Podcast Network. He's intern Joe. I'm Mike Yu. Appreciate everyone that tuned in today. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, and we'll catch you on Thursday, GC Live Afternoon Drive.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.